Americans for the Arts.
And support for WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, WMNF, our community radio station. Support comes from you, our wonderful members, and Florida Southern College, encouraging visitors to experience the world's largest collection of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture with a guided campus tour. Tour reservations and details can be found at flsouthern.edu/FLLW. Well, good afternoon. My name is Joellen Schilke. I am the hostess who loves you the mostest. Thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome back, Janelle. It's so nice to have you back. Dan Ruth was totally A-okay in my book, but Janelle is just, she's my rock star preceder on the show, so that's great to have her. You are listening to WNF. This show is called Art in Your Ear. On today's show, we're going to kind of explore what art does, what museums do, why theater is important, and then play a bunch of stuff for you. So I hope you will buckle in and listen up. But we're going to start off with, longtime listeners know I love me a cover. So let's start off with a band. They're called Say Sue Me. See if you recognize this song.
Bye.
And I hope you like that. Hey, I'd like to say thank you, thank you, thank you. Did I mention thank you? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Happy New Year from all of us at WMNF. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are especially grateful to those who donated to our end of the year campaign. It was a success. It was, you guys. Thank you. And we appreciate you for getting 2019 off to a great start. I also want to mention that next Wednesday night, the 9th of January, we have our first new volunteer orientation of the year. And if you're interested in volunteering here at WMNF, it's at 7 p.m. here at WMNF, 1210 East MLK Boulevard in Tampa, just north of downtown. So it starts at 7. You can sign up to be a volunteer for WMNF if you haven't done that already by going to WMNF.org. If you scroll down on the front of the website, there's a link in the middle of that to the right, and it says that is where you sign up to volunteer. So think about it. Maybe that is one of your New Year's resolutions, is to do something like that. Well, next week you can get it going. We have our fun drive in February, our winter fun drive in February, and that's a really great way for people to start and get to know the station and meet the DJs that they listen to and just have a really great time. We are a very volunteer-oriented organization, and it's wonderful when new people bring their excitement and their passion in to us. All right, we're going to listen to a talk from Ariana Curtis. She is a really interesting curator, researcher, all different things. And this one I wanted to play for you actually a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get a chance, so we're going to play it now. She's talking about why museums should honor the everyday and not just the extraordinary. Here's Ariana Curtis with her talk on why museums should honor the everyday and not just the extraordinary.
Representation matters. Authentic representations of women matter. I think that too often, our public representations of women are enveloped in the language of the extraordinary. The first American woman to become a self-made millionaire, Madam C.J. Walker. The dresses of the first ladies of the United States. Shirley Chisholm, the first woman to seek the U.S. Democratic Party's presidential nomination. As a museum curator, I understand why these stories are so seductive. Exceptional women are inspiring and aspirational. But those stories are limiting. By definition, being extraordinary is non-representative. It's atypical. Those stories do not create a broad base for incorporating women's history, and they don't reflect our daily realities. If we can collectively apply that radical notion that women are people, it becomes easier to show women as people are. Familiar, diverse, present, in everyone's everyday throughout history. Women exist positively, not as a matter of interpretation, but as a matter of fact. And beyond a more accurate representation of human life, including women considers the quotidian experiences of the almost 3.8 billion people identified as female on this planet. In this now notorious museum scene from the Black Panther movie, a white curator erroneously explains an artifact to Michael B. Jordan's character seen here, an artifact from his own culture. This fictional scene caused real debates in our museum communities about who is shaping the narratives and the bias that those narratives hold. Museums are actually rated one of the most trustworthy sources of information in the United States. And with hundreds of millions of visitors from all over the world, we should tell accurate histories, but we don't. There is a movement from within museums themselves to help combat this bias, the simple acknowledgement that museums are not neutral. Museums are didactic. Through the display of art and artifacts, we can incite creativity and foster inclusion. But we are guilty of historical misrepresentation. Our male-centered histories have left our herstories hidden. And there are hard truths about being a woman, especially a woman of color in this industry, that prevents us from centering inclusive examples of women's lives. Museum leadership, predominantly white and male, despite women comprising some 60% of museum staffs. Pipelines to leadership for women are bleakest for women of color. And the presence of women does not in and of itself guarantee an increase in women's public representation. Not all women are gender equity allies. In the words of feminist theorist bell hooks, patriarchy has no gender. Women can support the system of patriarchy just as men can support the fight for gender equity. And we often downplay the importance of intersectionality. Marian Anderson was one of the most celebrated voices of the 20th century. And the Smithsonian collected her 1939 outfit after the White Daughters of the American Revolution denied her access to sing in Constitution Hall because she was black. She famously sang instead on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial to a crowd of over 75,000 people. And in libraries all over, including museums, you can still find the groundbreaking 1982 anthology entitled All of the Women Are White, All of the Blacks Are Men, But Some of Us Are Brave. Demands for the increase in women's representation does not automatically include Afro-Latinas like me, or immigrant women, or Asian women, or Native women, or trans women, or undocumented women, or women over 65, or girls. The list can go on and on and on. So what do we do? Targeted initiatives have helped incorporate perspectives that should have always been included. I arrived at the Smithsonian through a Latino curatorial initiative, whose hiring of Latinx curators, mostly women, by the way, has raised the profile for Latinx narratives across our institution. And it served as a model for our much larger Smithsonian American Women's History Initiative, which seeks to amplify diverse representations of women in every possible way, so that women show up not only in the imagery of our contemporary realities, but in our historical representations, because we've always been here. Right now, though, in 2018, I can still walk into professional spaces and be the only person under 40, the only black person, the only black woman, the only Latina, sometimes the only woman. My mother is African-American, and my father is Afro-Panamanian. I am so proudly and inextricably both. As an Afro-Latina, I'm one of millions. As an Afro-Latina curator, I'm one of very few. And bringing my whole self into the professional realm can feel like an act of bravery. And I'll admit to you that I was not always up for that challenge, whether from fear of rejection or self-preservation. In meetings, I would only speak up when I had a fully developed comment to share. No audible brainstorming or riffing off of colleagues. For a long time, I denied myself the joy of wearing my beloved hoop earrings or nameplate necklace to work, thinking that they were too loud or unscholarly or unprofessional. I wondered how people would react to my natural hair, or if they viewed me as more acceptable or less authentic when I straighten it. And anyone who has felt outside of mainstream representations understands that there are basic elements just of our everyday being that can make other people uncomfortable. But because I am passionate about the everyday representation of women as we are, I've stopped presenting an inauthentic representation of myself or my work. And I have been tested. This is me pointing at my hoop earring in my office. Just last month, I was invited to keynote a Latino Heritage Month event. The week of the presentation, the organization expressed concerns. They called my slides activist, and they meant that negatively. Two days before the presentation, they requested that I not show a 2-minute video affirming natural hair because it, quote, may create a barrier to the learning process for some of the participants, end quote. That poem, Hair, was written and performed by Elizabeth Acevedo, a Dominican-American 2018 National Book Award winner, and it appeared in an award-winning Smithsonian exhibit that I curated. I canceled the talk, explaining to them that their censorship of me and my work made me uncomfortable. Respectability politics and idealized femininity influence how we display women and which women we choose to display. And that display has skewed towards successful and extraordinary and reputable and desirable, which maintains the systemic exclusion and marginalization of the everyday, the regular, the underrepresented, and usually the non-white. As a museum curator, I am empowered to change that narrative. I research, collect, and interpret objects and images of significance. Celia Cruz, the queen of salsa, yes, is significant, and an Afro-Latina. The Smithsonian has collected her costumes, her shoes, her portrait, her postage stamp, and this reimagining by artist Tony Peralta. When I collected and displayed this work, it was a victory for symbolic contradictions. Pride in displaying a dark-skinned Latina, a black woman, whose hair is in large rollers, which straighten your hair, perhaps a nod to white beauty standards. A refined, glamorous woman in oversized, chunky gold jewelry. When this work was on view, it was one of our most Instagrammed pieces, and visitors told me they connected with the everyday elements of her brown skin, or her rollers, or her jewelry. Our collections include Celia Cruz and a rare portrait of a young Harriet Tubman. Iconic clothing from the incomparable Oprah Winfrey. But museums can literally change how hundreds of millions of people see women and which women they see. So rather than always the first or the famous, it's also our responsibility to show a regular Saturday at the beauty salon the art of door knocker earrings, fashionable sisterhood, and cultural pride at all ages. Stories of everyday women whose stories have been knowingly omitted from our national and global histories. And oftentimes in museums, you see women represented by clothing or portraits or photography. But impactful, life-changing stories from everyday women can also look like this Esmeralda in boat seat. Esmeraldas, Ecuador was a Maroon community. Its dense rainforest protected indigenous and African populations from Spanish colonizers. There are roads now, but there were some parts inland that are still only accessible by canoe. Deborah Nazareno frequently traveled those Ecuadorian waterways by canoe, so she had her own boat seat. Hers personalized with a spider web and a spider representing Anansi, a character in West African folklore. Deborah also sat on this seat at home, telling stories to her grandson, Juan. And this intangible ritual of love in the form of intergenerational storytelling is common in communities across the African diaspora. And this everyday act sparked in Juan the desire to collect and preserve over 50,000 documents related to Afro-Indian culture. In 2005, Juan Garcia Salazar, Deborah's grandson, and by now a world-renowned Afro-Ecuadorian scholar, traveled to Washington, D.C. He met with Lonnie Bunch, the director of the museum where I work. And toward the end of their conversation, Juan reached into his bag and said, "I'd like to give you a present." On that day, Deborah Nazareno's humble wooden boat seat became the very first object donated to the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. It is encased, displayed, and has been seen by almost 5 million visitors from all over the world. I will continue to collect from extraordinary history makers. Their stories are important. But what drives me to show up today and every day is the simple passion to write our names in history, display them publicly for millions to see, and walk in the ever-present light that is woman. Thank you.
Latinx is WMNF's newest program. 2 hours of Latin alternative indie music from all over the world. I am Isha, your host, and we will be on WMNF's HD2 New Sound Stream on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. You can listen on WMNF.org, on the WMNF app, or on your car's HD radio. We have a whole new world of music for you. Join me on Tuesdays. Latinx es el nuevo programa de WMNF. 2 horas de música latina alternativa e indie de todas partes del mundo. Yo soy Isha, tu presentadora, y estaremos sonando en WMNF HD2 New Sounds los martes a las 11 de la mañana y otra vez a las 7 de la noche. Puedes escucharnos en el web o utilizar la aplicación de WMNF. También por el canal HD de tu radio. Tenemos un mundo de música para ti. Acompáñanos los martes.
gentlemen of the class of 97. Wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance. So are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance. Even if you have nowhere to do it but in your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly.
Brother and sister, together we'll make it through. Someday our spirit will take you and guide you there.
To know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Travel. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You too will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you'll have a wealthy spouse. But you never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me, on the sunscreen.
WMNF and WMNF After Dark present Twist in the Dark, our third annual Dark Wave Showcase, featuring Sleeping Pills. and South Florida's A Starry Night. Plus, DJs Mouse and Mark Paradise from Communion After Dark. The action takes place Saturday, January 5th at the Crowbar in Ybor City. Doors are at 8. Go to WMNF.org for more info.
And that is tomorrow night. Tickets are available. It should be a really fun show. Those Twist in the Dark shows are great. And then tonight, of course, is Cracker and Camper Van Beethoven, which I'm sad to tell you, if you didn't get your tickets, I'm sorry. There are no tickets left. None available. My apologies. I wish that we could fit lots more people in there, but something about, I don't know. What is it? fire codes, I think. Anyway, we just heard some Loris Vidal, Freed, and then a song I've wanted to play forever, Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen. And that is off the Baz Luhrmann soundtrack from Romeo and Juliet. We're going to be listening to a talk here just in a moment called Economics and Art. It's by Megan Wilkins. We're listening to TED Talks today. It's by Megan Wilkins. She is from the London School of Economics. And so, you know, she kind of knows what she's talking about. I hope you'll enjoy it. I keep thinking how the arts get cut over and over again in our state and just what a economic driver they are.
With a BA in economics and a minor in art history. And ever since I enrolled in these concentrations, I found myself justifying that choice to others. I cannot even count the number of times that I have been asked, why did you choose the art history minor with an economics major? My reasoning has always been that I enjoyed both of them. But repetitively answering this question caused me to find a connection between the two of these things. And when I was studying abroad at the London School of Economics, I would pop into a couple of museums on the way back from class, and I would find myself overwhelmed with the art around me. I was being inundated with information, but not in the form of bar graphs and regression analysis and 50-page scholarly articles. It was then that I realized how immediate art is. I could understand a culture, and that's something I was really trying to do with economics. And it was then that I started kind of seeing, maybe there is a connection here between art and economics. And so I started looking for one in one of my favorite places to look, in art. And I think I found a couple of pieces that even economists would find interesting. And I'd like to share a couple of those with you today. The first one is this Buddha statue. It's old and it really depicts Buddha in a way that we have come accustomed to seeing Buddha. It's very old, so it's probably about 1,000 years old, probably produced in India or one of its neighboring countries. And the thing is, if you assumed all of those things, you'd be completely correct. And then you might go on to say, it was probably found there. But it was found in Sweden. This object and the collection of items that it was found with redefined the way that historians looked at trade routes during the time that it was produced, and really helped them uncover something that was previously undocumented. And this is just one example of how art, when it's taken into its context, can redefine the way that we look at our culture. And even objects that we are familiar with, take the Mona Lisa for example, can be just as informative. Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa is one of the most well-known works of art ever produced. I don't think anybody can argue with that. And the thing is, it was completely radical at the time that it was made. Instead of showing Lisa's finest jewelry and wonderful ensemble, Leonardo decided to show her natural beauty, to highlight that, and to blend her in with the landscape. This was crazy for Leonardo. He didn't want to show it to anyone. And Leonardo, arguably, is one of the greatest artists ever to be on this earth. And he was also a man of science. the Renaissance man. And 20 years after this was finished, the Catholic Church began the Inquisition, which was really fueled by this desire to break away from the grandeur of the Renaissance and to get back to basics. And if economists, had they existed at the time, looked at this work and known that Leonardo da Vinci produced it, maybe they would have seen that coming. Another work that I find fascinating is American Gothic by Grant Wood, and this was produced in 1930. The figures here to me seem plain, strong, and rigid, and it really looks as if they're trying to restrain their emotions. It's kind of saving face for each other's benefit. This resilience is really something that's important economically, just because that sort of attitude defines the economic decisions that you make for the rest of your life. And this was made in 1930, in August of 1930, not even a year after the stock market crash, and well before the effects of that event were being felt across the world. And Grant Wood presents that here for all to see, well before we would see it economically. A modern artist that I think has come to have a really far-reaching impact on my generation is the musical artist Macklemore. His song Thrift Shop and the corresponding music video has changed the way that my generation looks at thrift stores. And it's just an example of how art is just as much a reaction to our culture as it is an agent in shaping it. Because I know that the majority of my friends would never have even looked at a thrift store before this song came out. But I can say that since it has, they have gone to a thrift store because this song came out. And usually you would assume that if you're making more money, that you're not going to want to go to a thrift store. But since the song came out, people will also go to a thrift store. And this is the opposite of what all of my economics classes taught me. And it's just another example of how art can really reshape the way that we make decisions economically, or human choices, through the way that it really adjusts our attitudes towards things that we might not like or do like. And are there more examples of this? Of course there are. I don't know how far-reaching this phenomena is, but I'm really interested to see how far it does go. And I can't wait to see what economists come up with the information that artists have given them.
And that was Megan Wilkins about economics and art. This time of the year, it's out with the old, in with the new. If you are cleaning out your garage, WM&F accepts vehicle donations and will gladly worry about the sale and the paperwork so you don't have to. We will pick up those not-so-cool Hot Wheels at a time convenient for you. Call 1-888-966-3885 or visit WMNF.org. And thank you. This just never stops, does it?
Hi, this is Olga Boff with a WMNF community announcement. Keep St. Petersburg Local's 6th annual Locotopia takes place on Saturday, February 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Williams Park. Locotopia is St. Pete's largest community celebration of all things local with over 200 vendors. Details at keepstpetersburglocal.org/locotopia.
What you've done, you've made a mess of me, and I don't want to clean up. I'm dangerously high.
Should have loved you presently, and given in earnest words I flung in jest, and lifted honest eyes for you to see, and caught your hand against my cheek and breast, and all my pretty follies flung aside that won you to me, and beneath your gaze, naked of reticence and shorn of pride, spread like a chart my little wicked ways. I that had been to you had you remained but one more waking from a recurrent dream, cherish no less the certain stakes I gained, and walk your memory's halls, austere, supreme, a ghost in marble of a girl you knew, who would have loved you in a day or two.
And that was Alyssa Milano reading a Edna St. Vincent poem, I Think I Should Have Loved You Presently. We also had a little bit of, was that Tipsy? No, that was Bittersweet in there. And now, I want to let you know, just in case you aren't paying attention, because I wasn't, perhaps you aren't, it's going to get a little cool this weekend. We're not going to have this glorious, beautiful, wonderful, fantastic Florida winter weather. It's going to cool down. There might be some rain over the next 24 hours, and then the sun will come back out, and it is going to be chilly. So make sure you stay warm, okay? Okay, maybe you can go out and play some space golf. This is Tipsy with Space Golf.
no salvation. But I just cannot see the point. Cause there's so much food here today that no one wants to take away.
One. Among 20 snowy mountains, the only moving thing was the eye of the blackbird. Two. I was of three minds, like a tree in which there are three blackbirds. Three. The blackbird whirled in the autumn winds. It was a small part of the pantomime. Four. A man and a woman are one. A man and a woman and a blackbird are one. Five. I do not know which to prefer, the beauty of inflections or the beauty of innuendos, the blackbird whistling or just after. Six. Icicles filled the long window with barbaric glass. The shadow of the blackbird crossed it to and fro. The mood traced in the shadow an indecipherable cause. Seven. O thin men of Haddam, why do you imagine golden birds? Do you not see how the blackbird walks around the feet of the women about you? Eight. I know noble accents and lucid, inescapable rhymes. But I know, too, that the blackbird is involved in what I know. Nine. When the blackbird flew out of sight, it marked the edge of one of many circles. 10. At the sight of the blackbirds flying in a green light, even the bawds of euphony would cry out sharply. 11. He rode over Connecticut in a glass coach. Once a fear pierced him. In that he mistook the shadow of his equipage for blackbirds. 12. The river is moving. The blackbird must be flying. 13. It was evening all afternoon. It was snowing, and it was going to snow. The blackbird sat in the cedar limbs.
And that is one of my all-time absolutely favorite poems, 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird by Wallace Stevens. Well, thank you so much for listening. This hour went so fast. You are listening to WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned for Eyelid Cinema. They're going to be on the live music showcase just after the NPR news, which is coming up in a few seconds. You've been listening to 88.5 WMNF Tampa, the last local radio station. Stay tuned.